Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
President Future plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. Our guests include Greg Ballantyne from Puck Stops here via Kukla's Corner. Very interesting blog that covers a wide range of NHL issues. We'll talk to him about the NHL in general and a few Oiler-related questions. Also today, Doug McClain from Rogers Sportsnet. We'll talk to him about this year's trade deadline. He was in the middle of things and heavily involved, and I think there's some interesting insight re the Oilers he'll be able to pass along. A little bit about the Oilers moving forward and the three amigos up front, Hall, Pajarvi, and Eberle. We'll all talk to Derek Zona from Copper and Blue, Matt Fenwick and Kent Wilson, two our Flames bloggers who are very interesting, and Kent Simpson, Team 1260 Oil Kings broadcast analyst, and we'll talk about that crazy opening game between the Rebels and the Oil Kings last night, and another one coming tonight that is going to be something special. Our first guest is from the Puck Stops here, an outstanding blog. Welcome, Greg Ballantyne. Greg, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. You're on Kukla's Corner, and you had a blog previously independent of Kukla's Corner. Very interesting and a daily stop for me. Can you describe to anybody who hasn't dropped by your blog and its content?
Well, basically, I guess I'm a hockey fan in general, meaning I've tried to talk about whatever is going on in the NHL, not only the NHL, but if there's interesting things going on in the AHL or internationally. One of my interests is statistics and sabermetrics and trying to figure out who, some of the deep thing insights into hockey and what's going on. I guess that makes me a bit of a stat nerd. And I've always been interested in trying to put what's going on right now into perspective, trying to figure out how we're going to see these things when we look back in 5, 10, 20 years.
One of the things that I really enjoy about your blog is that you really do look at things that no one else appears to be exploring. An example would be recently you stated that the strongest Norris candidate for best defenseman was Lubomir Vyzhnovsky. Give me the back. I agree with you. I think he's had a great year. But give me the background and the statistical conclusions you came to arrive at that decision.
Well, in order to answer that question, you have to sort of look at the Norris Trophy race as a whole. There isn't a runaway candidate who I think should be the clear winner for everybody. Now, a lot of people probably look at Nicklas Lidström and see him as that candidate because he's got the name recognition. He's been there. He's won it six times in the past. But when you actually start looking into his game, what you find is he hasn't really done as well at even strength as he has in the past. Some of his numbers that show his puck possession, this is plus minus, this is Corsi ratings. I'm not sure how well your audience is familiar with all of these things, but basically things that show who's possessing the puck when he's on the ice aren't as strong as they've been. Now, there are plenty of other candidates. There's Keith Yandel, there's Dustin Byfuglien. I think Zdeno Chara is a really good candidate as well. But Vyzhnovsky, he has been one of the men who has really driven the Anaheim Duck offense. He has very, very good puck possession numbers, and especially relative to his teammates in Anaheim. This is all team dependent, these numbers. And Anaheim is not the best team in the NHL. Anaheim does not have the same puck possession numbers as most teams, yet he comes out way ahead of his team. And that's really impressive. Of course, you can look at the most simple thing you can do is look at the scoring race among defensemen, and he's the leader right now, mm-hmm. although that in and of itself doesn't paint the picture as well as looking at some of the underlying numbers.
Would he also be a candidate for MVP? And on tangent on that, who would be your MVP right now?
My MVP right now, I think, would be Tim Thomas.
Okay.
I don't know that there is a defenseman right now who's seriously in the MVP race. Tim Thomas is he was putting up what was the best saves percentage in the history of hockey. He's sort of fallen back a little bit, but is by far and above the number one goaltender in hockey this season. Now, the question is that he hasn't played every game the way Carey Price or Henrik Lundqvist or somebody has, in part because Boston has, they have a legitimate backup goaltender in Tuukka Rask. But this is also a year where there is no huge offensive scoring talent. There probably could have been if Sidney Crosby didn't get injured, but without Crosby there, we're looking at a year where nobody's going to score 50 points. Probably Daniel Sedin will be the only person to clear 100 points. And there just isn't a big offense. There isn't a big offensive superstar. I don't think there's a huge defensive star this season. So that leaves it wide open for a goaltender. And Thomas has done, it's been outstanding so far this year.
Is Thomas the most dominant goaltender in the league since Hasek in the late 90s?
It's a hard question to answer. A big thing that I sort of look at as a caveat with him is Boston's got a very good defense in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the third year in a row that a Boston goaltender leads the NHL in saves percentage. It was Rask last year, it was Thomas the year before that. And I think one big constant of that is actually the Boston defense as opposed to the goaltending itself. I'd certainly want to name two other names who might be the best goaltender, at least sort of since the lockout, in Thomas Vokoun and Roberto Luongo. Now, Vokoun, nobody really looks at him. He's been in Nashville, he's been in Florida, and these are teams that really haven't had a run anywhere, but he has put up some outstanding numbers year after year. And Luongo, everyone knows Luongo is a very good goaltender, yet they seem to dwell on a handful of games against the Chicago Blackhawks in the playoffs and say, therefore, he can't win, despite the fact he's won a gold medal in the Olympics, he's won in the World Championships. I think it's a case where people are overlooking the majority of his play for a handful of high-profile games that, you know, things happen. Sometimes you just don't have... Sometimes your best game is not the biggest game, and that's just life. Luck and the way the puck bounces.
Absolutely. This is Nation Radio. We're live at the Pint on Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. It's Alan Mitchell in conversation with Greg Ballantyne from Puck Stops here, an excellent blog. I'm going to ask you a couple of Oiler questions here. Oiler fans were very excited about Taylor Hall as he really ramped it up in the early part of the second half. Had he stayed healthy, he might be finishing around the 28 to 30 goal range. Do you think he would have been a strong Calder candidate had he stayed healthy?
Certainly he would have been a strong candidate. I'm often not on the same page as the majority of the media or the majority of the fans when it comes to picking who should win various awards. And it would have certainly depended on what Hall would have done down the stretch. Whether or not he could actually win the Calder, I would not be surprised if he could have been a nominee. If you actually want my pick right now,
yep.
My pick for the Calder Trophy is probably going off the board a little bit and saying John Carlson of the Washington Capitals. Here's a defenseman who's been their number one shutdown man all season. He may not have the huge offensive numbers to show for it, but I think he's been the best rookie so far this season.
His overall skill set is amazing. Do you give any do you dock him at all for the fact that he's playing at a pretty good hockey club and that his offensive numbers might be a little bit inflated based on that?
No. I the role he's played has not been an offensive role. And yes, Washington's a very good team, but when you're a rookie player, what that often means is you just, unless you're a really good player, you don't get the ice time. There are a lot of cases where a good rookie has come in on a really good team and not been able to get the ice time, the same way the Oilers have a handful of rookies this year who, of course, they've been handed the ice time. I mean, why wouldn't you give Taylor Hall as much ice time as you can, given that he really is as good as anybody, which is a little bit sad for the current state of the Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks good for the it's good for the future, and with Hall and with Eberle, the team is going, the Oilers are definitely going to grow, and the days that they sit in the bottom of the league are not going to last. But unlike a player like Carlson, he was handed his ice time because who else would you give it to?
Right. Right, absolutely. Final question for you, Greg. If you're Steve Tambellini, do you pursue more immediate help this summer in order to make sure you don't have a repeat of what happened this year, or do you stay the course with the kids?
You have to stay the course with the kids. The kids are the future. Now, the one thing that I would be looking at if I was Tambellini is find a way to get a goaltender who's not Nikolai Habibulin playing the majority of the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure if it's still true, but as of recently, he was the lowest saves percentage in the league among goalies who had enough games to qualify for the race.
That's true. He's actually regressed since then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is the thing that I would be looking at. I don't think I'm on the same page as the Oilers franchise on him, but I'd be looking at trying to buy him out and bring in one of the free agent goaltenders. That would be pretty much the big buy I'd be looking for this summer.
Interesting.
If I was Tambellini.
All right. Greg, thanks so much, and we're going to reserve the right to call you back again another time. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
All right. Greg Valentine from Puck Stops here. Check it out. It's on Kukla's Corner, and he really does write innovative stuff. I don't see anybody doing what he's doing. Norris candidate Lubomir Vyshnovsky, he makes a really strong case. You want to check that out. And as for buying out Habibulin, it won't help. He's a 35-plus contract, so I think he's here next year, although Tambellini did, I thought, a very good job of signing an AHL veteran in Martin Gerber, who could have helped out more this year, but such as it is, they wanted to, I think, end up in the lottery spot, which the Oilers have done. The Oilers are playing tonight. We'll talk about that and many more things with Doug McLean from Rogers Sportsnet right after this.
Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We're live at the Pine until 2 o'clock today. You can email us at nationradio at team1260.com. Very busy show. All kinds of activity going on. Oilers in action tonight. And we welcome Doug McLean from Rogers Sportsnet. Doug, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. Oilers play Calgary tonight. They are outmanned, and the Flames still have a shot at a playoff spot. The Oilers have been outscored 34-7 in their last eight games. Is this a case of bringing a knife to a gunfight for the Oilers?
Well, you know, you got a desperate Flames team that have no choice. They got to run the table to get in. And, you know, I mean, they do have six winnable games. Calgary's going to bring it all. I mean, they didn't play very well in San Jose the other night. So, you know, and Edmonton's coming off a horrific performance in, St. Louis, where they were so bad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the Flames.
Bad isn't the word for it.
No, you're right. It was a very poor performance.
10 shots on goal, none in the third period. That can't be accurate, was it?
No, that was what I had read. So it's
when it's that way, Tom's got to start just telling them on the bench that when they get to center ice, shoot it on net, just so it doesn't look so bad.
Right, and then chase towards the net and hope for a turnover in the corner or something like that.
No, just get it on net so the stats don't look bad. Don't worry about scoring.
So
it's all about appearance when you see the stats.
Well, there you go. Now, the fans are online. They're renewing season tickets at a 90% clip here in Edmonton. That's an independent source for the Oilers. After what has been a trying season, if this scorched earth rebuild works, do you see it ever happening in another Canadian NHL city?
I don't think you'll see it as drastic. I think Calgary's on the verge of having to rebuild their team, no doubt about that. Ottawa has started that process. You know, I don't think you'll see maybe it as drastic as Edmonton, where they've really torn it down. So, you look at Calgary and Ottawa, I mean, where are they going to be next year? I mean, Calgary's one of the oldest teams in the league, a lot of money committed at their contracts. You like the character of their group and you like lots of things about them, but I don't see a long-term winner there, I'll tell you that.
If you're Steve Tambellini and you know history tells you that you might not be around when this thing gets really good, how difficult is it to trade a Dustin Penner at the deadline for futures?
I didn't mind the move in Penner. I don't think he's a guy you're gonna, you know, I like Dustin Penner. I just don't think he's a long-term guy that isn't irreplaceable. I think if you got a couple of draft picks for him, a prospect, and the defenseman Tolbert, I thought it was a reasonably good deal for Steve. And Hemsky, there was a lot of talk about him. I wish he'd get his health because he can help them, you know, as they rebuild. But I don't, you know, I like Penner, but I don't think it's a big loss. I probably you know, would you have kept him? Yeah, 30-goal guys are hard to find, and he's a big body. But to me, he's a second-line guy, and that's where he has to be because he doesn't have the motivation to be a top guy.
Do the Oilers really have to go out and replace him, though, in the summer with a big, big body for the top six forward group? Because they really don't have one of those now.
Yeah, they've got to find some top six guys. And you know, bigger body guys, character guys. I think if the Leafs were to walk from a Clark MacArthur type of kid, I think he'd be a real nice fit with them. And I said that here the other day, that if Toronto get cute and don't sign him, 25 years of age, a 20-goal guy, I think he'd be, that type of guy would be a great fit for the Oilers. He can score his 20. He's a two-way guy. He competes hard. So I think that's the type of guy they really need to surround their young guys with more than a Penner type of guy.
You mentioned it a while ago. With regard to Hemsky, you sat in the GM chair for years. If you're looking at a guy like Hemsky, but he does have that injury and he may be rehabbing even as training camp opens, is that something that's enough to scare you off of making an offer?
Yeah, I think that's why, you know, it didn't get going at the deadline. I think too many people were concerned about his health. It's been a real history, and it's too bad because he is a talented guy that makes people around him better, and lots of teams could have used him, but there's no doubt about that. I had an interesting talk to Dean Lombardi right after the deadline, and he said, you know, when you sit down and start to write names down as guys you'd like to acquire that you think potentially could be available, and all of a sudden you knock guys out of the box that have had concussions, and you knock guys out of the box that had a history of injuries, it gets real thin out there. So, yeah. I mean, 85 guys with concussions this year in the league, are you going to trade for a guy that's had concussion issues? Probably not. So, or at least, I mean, you're certainly gambling if you do. So that was interesting coming from Dean.
The Oilers have looked, earlier in the year, Tom Rennie tried Taylor Hall for a few games at center, and it didn't go badly. He's a terrific talent. Do you think that's something they might revisit in the summertime, depending upon where they go on draft day?
Yeah, maybe. Centermen are unbelievably hard to find. Like, I could never get one in Columbus for Nash. I mean, I drafted Brassard 6, and I hope Brule. I was hoping they would be the centermen of the future because they were such great juniors. And they're hard to find. They really are hard to find. Columbus still haven't got a guy for Nash. I mean, Brassard is coming along, but it just takes a long time. I mean, it's such a valuable position, and Hall is so good on the wing. If he could become that big power centerman, that would be really important for their team, because wingers are a lot easier to find than those big centermen that, you know, that every good franchise, every winning franchise has.
What's your opinion on Pajarvi moving forward? I know you've seen him a bit. He's got good speed, maybe not the hands of the other two rookies. Do you see him as being more of a two-way forward moving forward?
Yeah, I see him as a real valuable top six guy with that speed and skill set. You know, I mean, it's gonna learning curve for him. It's a big chance transition, but I really like the kid as a player. I mean, those three young guys have got, you know, different elements, but they're all very, very good young players. So the fans should be excited about that core group there.
Talking to Doug McLean from Rogers Sportsnet on Nation Radio, Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. The kid Omar, I've noticed he's a hot dog, and I've noticed recently he seems to be paying a little bit of a price, hooking, grabbing, running him over, and he's not getting the calls. Is that something that he's paying a heavy price for with his hot dog style, on top of the fact that he's a rookie?
Yeah, I don't know that that's really unusual. I mean, he made a big name for himself on a couple of great moves. I mean, I kind of liked him, to be quite honest. I wasn't coaching against him or managing against him, or playing against him, but I kind of liked him. I mean, I think he's one of those guys. Is he like a Robbie Shrimp type of guy? Does he ever really become a real top guy? I don't know him well enough to really comment, but I've sort of gotten a kick out of him, to be quite honest. Yeah, you pay a little price for that, but eventually that goes away and you just become another NHL player.
Doug, this summer the Oilers are very likely to buy out Sheldon Surrey, and then the next veteran that they might have to look at doing something with is Nikolai Habibulin, whose game has eroded in midway through a four-year contract. As a general manager, former general manager, you've got a kid in Dubnyk, and you've got this summer to maybe shop for a guy who could step in if Habibulin falters again next fall. Do you really look at that position as being a main area to address?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think that's a real concern. I mean, Javi Boulin is a battler, and he's had some injury issues. But you know what? I don't think that's their really would be their number one priority. You can always find a backup for Dubnyk. You can find if Dubnyk continues to develop, you can find somebody mid season if Javi Boulin's having injury problems. But there's a lot of money there. You know, you've got to hope that he can salvage at least another year before you really go down that road. And, you know, he's a character guy. It wouldn't surprise me he'll bounce back.
Changing gears a little bit, Columbus has struggled again this year. You know, you mentioned about injuries and there's a sense there that there's going to be a lot of pressure on your predecessor, Scott Housen, during this summertime. What's the problem there? Is it just injuries or just not being able to get over the hump in a very difficult conference?
Well, they got a real good group of young players there. There's no doubt about that. I mean, obviously with Nash and Broussard and Voracek and, you know, Russell's a good young kid. And, you know, I think they've got a pretty solid core group of kids. And I think his biggest problem, Scott's, was the five guys he brought in, starting with Husilius at 4.75 and going from there to Morrow at 1.8 and Chris Clark at 2.8 and, I mean, Paulson at 2.75 and Commodore at 3.75. That's $16 million in five guys that didn't help you win one game this year. One game.
That's tragic.
You're a budget team. That's frightening. So that's their challenge, is to find guys. And it's not easy. It's not easy because it's hard to get guys to go there. You got to overpay. It's not unlike Edmonton.
Yeah, very similar. With that in mind, do you think the first round pick, which is likely to be a top 10, do you think that's maybe in play this summer for Columbus?
You know, it might be. I mean, their drafting has been mediocre, obviously. Filatov is a major bust right now. I mean, I think he's in play. He's a guy that just simply, you pick a guy like that fifth overall. I mean, we all, and he was that's not a Scott Housen mistake, in my opinion. I mean, it's like when I took Zverev at four, everybody in hockey had him in the top five. Everybody. There wasn't a GM in the league that had him under the top five. And yet today it was a bad pick, and everybody talks about it. But Filatov was a good pick at five. Lots of people love this guy. It just hasn't worked out. So I think they're at the stage that Mason could be in play this summer because do they take a run at a Briscaleoff? Do they take a run at a Vakoon? And I think they've got to make the playoffs. They're going to be in dire straits to sell tickets there this summer. This year they were 12,000 a lot of nights, week nights. So it's really a tough, tough time there.
For sure. A couple of quick draft questions to close off. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is ripping it up in Red Deer. He scored 2-2 last night in a win over the Oil Kings. But the Oilers' depth chart screams for Adam Larson. Can they pass on the defenseman to take the center, or do they really have to take that defenseman this time around?
Oh, it's a really tough decision. I love Hopkins, and I really like Larson. I saw Larson, to be honest, just at the World Junior, where he was a young kid playing in a really tough tournament, you know, where Hopkins didn't make Team Canada. So I saw Hopkins once at the in the prospects game, and I really, really like this kid, the way he makes plays. He really reminds me a lot of a Brad Richards type with his vision. But it's a philosophical situation for them. They really need somebody to go with Whitney to rebuild their back end. Larson would be a real nice component, but really it's hard to go buy a Hopkins, I'll tell you that.
Two quick ones. The trade deadline day, is that your busiest day of the year?
Oh, it's busy, but I don't get too carried away with it.
I love the promo.
Compared to being a GM, it's not a very busy day. No, it's a long day, but I wouldn't say it's busy.
I love the promo where you looked very expert walking along the street, and it looked like Kiprios was on his way to pick up his kids at some class. He was busy or something. The promo look good.
He said that I was out buying him a coffee in a newspaper because he's so busy. But don't read a lot into the thing. It wasn't that busy, and I'm not that busy, and it's a pretty easy job.
Are you too busy to follow your UNB former college team?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm just was watching the McGill Alberta game, so I'm anxious to see how UNB does.
Yeah, they're playing Western at 7:30 Eastern tonight, right?
Right.
All right.
So, it's fun.
Yeah, Doug, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time.
Take care, bud.
All right. Doug McLean from Rogers Sportsnet over a litany of things. I wanted to talk to him about the, you know, his idea of the return for Penner and maybe some draft things, and then a little insight into Columbus, because I know when he left Columbus, it was like, okay, now we're going to, you know, move on up, and it really hasn't happened. And Scott Housen has a lot of respect in the National Hockey League and was described as being one of those really smart young execs, and sometimes it doesn't work out, and it appears as though, at least for now, in Columbus, it really hasn't happened. This is Nation Radio, live at the Pine on Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. It's just past 12:30. Up next, we'll talk to Derek Zona from Copper and Blue.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We're live at the Pint downtown, 109th and Jasper, until 2 o'clock today. Make sure to drop by and say hello if you can. You can also email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. Have a couple of emails to pass along here from Matt Robertson. Says, Low Tide, I live in Ottawa. I've had the chance to catch a few games in both Ottawa and Gatineau. Based on the players I've seen, some might find it surprising I would rank the prospects I've seen. They are number one, Dougie Hamilton. Number two, Strome, Landeskog, Jerko, Huberdeau, and Prince. He says Dougie Hamilton is a phenomenal defenseman. He reminds me of a Chris Pronger or Shea Weber. Head on a swivel, great pass out of the zone, amazing ability to control the game. Also has size and degree of aggression in the defensive zone. In my mind, Hamilton is ahead of Larson. I wouldn't knock anyone for taking him with the number one pick. And we'll talk about that and more with our next guest. Welcome Derek Zona from Copper and Blue. How are you, man?
Not bad, Alan. Thanks for having me on. How are you today?
Good. I'm well, Derek. Where are you, by the way?
I am in western Pennsylvania, a bit north of Pittsburgh.
Okay, so in terms of NCAA basketball, what country are you in?
I am in Pitt country.
Okay, so you're Pittsburgh a Pitt country. So you're heartbroken already, then?
Yeah, it Pitt tends to do that to the local guys. We've come to expect very little out of their postseason appearances.
Well, there you go. You know what? Sets you up to be an Oiler fan, I guess. Hey.
I have a misery when it comes to sports teams over the last 5, 6, 7 years. So I'm getting used to it.
There you go. You know, it's hard for me to find someone who likes Sam Gagner as much or more than I do, but I think you're it. What do you like about Sam Gagner's game?
I think he's, first of all, he's taken a lot of, I think, unnecessary flack from fans. And, you know, it's one of those things where I know you're a guy who's big on player development and progression for young players. And, you know, he's a very talented kid, smart player, very smart player, great hands, great ability, down low. He has great ability with the puck. Great vision, but the Oilers have put him in, you know, pretty terrible circumstances when it comes to his development. He's 4 years through the league now. He's avoided catastrophic injury. He's had a couple of small injuries. He's been banged up, two of the years thus far. But they've had three different coaches over the last 3 years, three different systems over the last 3 years. He was protected by McTavish during his rookie season, protected a bit during his sophomore season, but he's been, yanked up and down the lineup, different line mates, different wingers, and different roles. He's spent some time on the penalty kill, spent some time on the power play, and his progress, I think he's made some pretty remarkable progress given the circumstances.
I agree. I think the knock on him is there's two of them. I think it's size and a little bit of speed. What's your reaction to that with Gagner and looking through the Oilers' top six into the future?
I think same people who kind of knock Gagner down a peg for his size and speed fall all over themselves to compliment Jordan Eberle's hands and his vision and his abilities. They're very similarly sized. Gagner is smaller than your prototypical first line superstar center, but at the same time there are plenty of successful players in the NHL that are in his size range, and there are players who have gone on to great and fruitful careers that are in his size range, even from the pivot.
Gagne and Cogliano arrived in the NHL the same day. Both of them struggle on the faceoff circle, and it's one of the things that has to be addressed before this team gets any better. How do you think Tom Rennie will solve that problem?
I don't know. I honestly, it's been an issue ever since the great center purge of a couple of years ago. You know, the guys who have been able to take those draws, Reasoner, Stoll, and Brodziak have been sent away, and there's just been nobody, you know, brought in to replace them. I don't pretend to know how a professional hockey player can develop faceoff skills. You know, I know Jonathan Willis there at Oilers Nation has done a couple of studies on age. Scott Reynolds at my site has done a couple of studies on age as far as age and size, as far as faceoff ability and faceoff percentage. And we do know that players get better as they age, but you're also talking about two of the worst faceoff guys since 2000 that have had, you know, any kind of career in Cogliano and Gagne. You know, most guys who are down in their neighborhood, except for maybe Evgeny Malkin, are moved to the wing or have been moved out of the league. So I wouldn't be surprised to see either one of those guys eventually move to a wing. You know, I know we've talked about it with Cogliano, but you know, if Gagne is not able to progress to, you know, some kind of respectable level, 46-47%, I don't see him spending his entire career at center in the 42% range on the dot.
Do you think Gagne's skills on the power play are somewhat duplicated by Hemsky, and does that make one of them expendable moving forward?
I think they have very similar skills. I think they have that same playmaking mentality. They have a very similar vision. They're always looking for that backdoor pass. They're always looking to slip a seam. I don't think it makes them redundant. I don't think that just because they have similar skills on the power play, the Oilers should rid themselves of either. You know, you're always looking to accumulate good players. Just because good players have duplicate skills, I don't think is a reason to get rid of either one. I think they need to find a system, a power play system that works, and find a system that highlights their talents and the talents that the rest of the team has, Hall and especially Omar, Whitney. Find a system that benefits the team as a whole and plays to the strength that the guys have right now, rather than trying to, you know, move some good players because of redundant skills to plug into a preconceived system or preconceived notion of what you should see on the power play.
Do you think that the size in among the top six forward is as big an issue as many other fans like myself who really think that we need to have more size? Do you think it's an issue with the group that they have now and they have to bring in a, for lack of a better phrase, a Dustin Penner type?
yeah, it's funny that, you know, the fans have, even Camelini to an extent, have talked about, you know, getting bigger, getting grittier, especially, you know, at the forward position, and Penner is moved. I don't know. I don't think you can win with Smurfs, you know, for an entire lineup of Smurfs, but at the same time, I don't know that size is the primary driver of your lineup, or should be your primary driver of your player acquisition process. You know, the one guy, and you know, both of us have really been high on him since he was drafted, is Teemu Hartikainen.
Yep.
He's big, I guess, for an Oiler. He's 6'1", 215 or something like that. I mean, he's not big, huge for the NHL, but the kid plays, you know, 30 pounds heavier, maybe 2 inches taller than he's listed. You know, strong on the board, strong on the puck, you know, strong going to the front of the net, not afraid to you know, go anywhere on the ice. And you know, his primary purpose on the ice is to win puck battles and get the puck on the net. And you know, I don't think it comes down to size necessarily. It might come down more to a stylistic type of player that you're looking for. You know, Landeskog is the one that I'm really high on him, but he's that same kind of player. He might not be the biggest kid, but
right.
You know, he's bound and determined to win every battle on the ice.
Speaking of Hartikainen and how well he's played as an Oiler, what's been your initial impression of Hartikainen and then Vandeveld, strictly speaking, as Edmonton Oilers?
You know, they coming from a stats-based approach, you know, people always slag me for not watching games, but and you know, paying too much attention to the stats. Just looking at them and watching them, Hartikainen especially, you know, it was pointed out the other night, Bruce McCurdy at the Journal of Total Hockey, he talked about how Hartikainen twice made Carlo Koliakova look over his shoulder, both times running into him but winning the puck. You know, he's not out of place, I don't think.
Right.
I like the long development cycle. I'd like to see him blow the doors off of the AHL, you know, force his way into the lineup. But it looks like he may do that maybe a year earlier than I suspected. Vandeveldi has, you know, he struggled to score points in the AHL, but he doesn't look out of place either. He's, you know, somebody's got to fill that fourth line center role eventually, and you know, he's been maybe a little bit slower than a guy like Brodziak was a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he hasn't looked out of place. He's been physical when he needs to be, and he has a bunch of the skill sets his team needs: faceoffs and penalty killing.
Dan Tinser tweet earlier today gave the starting lines for tonight. It could change, but Vandeveld was between Eberle and Hartikainen on what was listed as the top line, so that should be interesting to watch tonight. Oklahoma City,
no.
Can you explain the Oklahoma City playoff picture in an hour or less?
the two guys that write for me, Neil Livingston and Scott Reynolds, have done a very good job of that. Because of the unbalanced divisions in the West, there is one crossover position available. Essentially, all of the teams in the Western Division cannot make it into the playoffs because of the unbalanced division. However, there is a crossover position available in the West, and I think it's fifth place. Don't quote me on that. It's confusing enough. But if the Barons are, if they accumulate enough points that they are in, because they are better than the fourth place team, I think, in the other division in the conference, so they can make the playoffs. But you know, if they even, I think they're in last in the division, but more points than the fourth place team in the other division, they won't make the playoffs.
Right. One of the things that I was very impressed about with your writing at the Copper and Blue, you're one of the first bloggers, I think you were the first, to uncover Hartikainen's impressive second half splits vis-a-vis the first half and the reasons behind them. And so I've followed Hartikainen, I know you have closely. I want to get your impressions, though, of some of the Oiler rookies who played this year. And let's begin with Taylor Hall.
He is, I don't know that if you can describe him in just a few words. He's the word that always comes to mind, and everybody's written this since he was in the OHL, is explosive. He is fearless, goes to the net. He is going to be a very, very good player in the NHL for 10, 12 years, and you know, he's going to be a 35-goal scorer for a very long time.
And what about, let's do Eberle next.
You know, I take a lot of flack for this, but I wasn't as high on Jordan Eberle as a lot of people were.
Me either.
He was the darling of Team Canada, but he didn't have, you know, watching him in juniors and, you know, in the World Juniors, he didn't have that one skill, that one talent that, you know, you look at a kid and you say, wow, you know, that is going to get him into the NHL. That is going to allow him to have a long career. He's going to get 500 games. And he just didn't seem to have that. You know, he had great hands, great vision, a quick little shot, and he always knew how to go to space. You know, everybody talks about goal scorers and playmakers getting into space, open space. But, you know what? He has, it seems like that skill set that he has translated to the NHL. He looks like he's playing at the same speed that he was playing in juniors. In the NHL, you know, it's translated perfectly, and I'll be the first to admit that I was wrong. I was wrong on Eberle. His skills are there. You know, he's going to be you're going to be on that right side for a very long time.
I was my concern over Eberle, he had a couple of down errors in junior. He didn't really progress statistically in his second year. And looking back, might have been that the team was so crappy that he was doing his best. He just didn't have any help there. But I agree with you.
He has been terrible.
Yeah, he has been. He's such an intelligent player. I mean, I compare him, not that he's going to have a Steve Shutt career, but he has a sixth sense around the net. And I've seen him do subtle things like change an angle on a shot and score a goal on an NHL goalie. And for a rookie to do that is phenomenal. There are guys who played in this league for a long time who've never been able to do that kind of a play. And he does it routinely, or at least has done it quite a bit in the NHL as a rookie. What about Pajarvi? What's your opinion on him?
I still believe he probably has more raw talent, maybe not the hands or the shot that Taylor Hall has, but I think he has more raw talent than any of the rookies. His skating ability is, we haven't seen that in Edmonton for, I don't know if we've ever seen it in Edmonton. He might, maybe since Paul Coffey. He is that fast. He has the ability. He's big. He's speedy. He's not a speedy little guy. He's a big forward. He already has really, really good defensive responsibility. He's another guy that's been yanked up and down the lineup. He's been, forced into a number of different roles. But on raw talent alone, he's tremendous. Fun to watch. And I think his development curve is maybe a little bit behind both Hall and Eberle right now, and I think it's going to take a bit of time for them to find the right role and the right place for him in the lineup and to really bring out his skill. But in terms of raw talent and raw ability, he's just, I don't think the Oilers have had something like him in a long time.
Yeah, I think many years ago they used to say about prospects that he has no idea how good he is, and I think that's a little bit Pajarvi. He's all skill set, and he's a smart player too, but when he learns that he can run over people, I think he's going to, so looking forward to that. What about Jeff Petrie?
He has a big shot too. That's one thing that not a lot of people realize. He has a huge shot, and I don't think he's just learned how to get it off and when to get it off yet.
Yeah, that last goal he scored was a beautiful shot up high, and he did. I agree with you on that. Now, what about Jeff Petrie? What's your been? We've only had 25 games to look at him, but what do you think?
I've been higher on him than most, and that's funny because we tend to deride the saw him good kind of people, but. Last year, I watched Petrie play two different games. One was against Wisconsin, and I think his ice time was something like 34 minutes when he was at Michigan State. And he did whatever he wanted to do on the ice, and he just looked like a forward, coming from the back, coming from the rear. And ever since then, I've been really high on him. I didn't think that he would be an impact rookie already. I thought he would be a Tom Gilbert type, maybe with a little better skating ability. But he's been tremendous. He has a very good puck awareness. He might not be Chris Pronger in terms of physicality or even Theo Peckham, but he knows where the puck is at all times. He's able to get the puck out. He can skate it out. He can pass it out. He's very good positionally already, and he's made his partner better. His ability to skate and pass and move the puck makes his partner better on the ice at even strength. I don't know if he's going to be a power play guy. He looks like he has the skills to be, but I'm very, very high on Petrie. I think he's going to be tremendous.
Final rookie before we get to a quick draft discussion, Devan Dubnyk.
I don't like goalies as a rule. they drive me insane. I don't know much about goaltending. I could never figure goaltending out. I could never figure goaltenders out. Their progression, their career progression is crazy. There's nothing linear about a goalie's career progression. So. And the guys that I rely on to look at goalies say he's developed each year. The stats didn't show it up until this year, but then all of a sudden he's had a not a stellar year, but he's had a pretty solid year behind a less than stellar team. So, you know, the guys who watch him, some of the guys who do analysis on goalies say that, you know, he's okay. He's going to be, he might not be your number one for every year, year in and year out, but he's going to give you 30 games, 35 games a year.
I once wrote a blog post years ago that equated goaltenders in the NHL to knuckleball pitchers, and I still think that's the best equation, because one day they're good and the other day they're not. It's a weird thing. And I do think Dubnyk has a future, but I don't know if it's as a number one goalie. Have you been following the 2011 draft?
I have. I've been doing it not, you know, we don't get to see a lot of the guys on a nightly basis, you know, unless you've got tickets to go out and sit down and watch the Oil Kings or sit down and watch the Hitmen. You don't get to see a lot of the guys coming through. I know Bruce McCurdy has, and he's done a number of scouting reports. But I've been tracking it statistically, looking at, you know, even strength and percentage of team goals and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, I kept an eye on it.
Pat McLean emailed a question for you, which is good because it means Pat's awake and he's up and he knows how to use email. He says, here's a question for Zona. I'm sure you'll ask him, wondering who he would pick first of all as of today.
As of right now, I'd go with Larson. I don't think it's drafting for need. They do need a defenseman in the organization, but I think of that top group, he probably has the most talent right now and the biggest and brightest future. My second is probably Landeskog.
Okay. And one final question before we let you go. The Oilers signed Tanner House last week. The contract details are up on CapGeek this morning. Signing bonus was $100,000. It's a two-year deal beginning in the fall, and it's a $600,000 cap hit should he make the NHL. What do you think of the Oilers signing guys like House and Fadun as college free agents?
I've written about it a couple of times, and it's actually a trend that, you know, I've been down on management for a while. I think a lot of us have, you know, just gotten sick of the perpetual rebuild and the losing. But the one positive aspect that Kevin Lowe has demonstrated in player procurement since 2006 has been adding bright and intelligent players to the organization. You know, Jordan Eberle was an academic standout. Fadun, obviously, coming from Princeton. Tanner House was academic all-conference. And even, you know, some of the guys, Sam Gagner is a very bright player. Cogliano was a very bright player. I don't think it's a bad thing to add intelligence to the organization. You know, a lot of teams will shy away from very bright guys. You know, they don't want thinkers. They don't want guys out there thinking for themselves. They want guys that are going to run through a brick wall when the coach wants them to. But they've added, you know, a number of intelligent players. They've added very, you know, outside of just hockey smarts, you know, they're adding just really smart guys. And I think in the long run, you know, they may not, Fadun and House may never make the NHL. But in the long run, I think it's good that the organization has these guys at all levels, the ECHL, the AHL, and in the big leagues.
Derek, so much for this. Thanks so much, and we appreciate it, and we'll be calling you back again soon.
Thanks, Alan. Have a good weekend.
That's Derek Zona from Copper and Blue. If you haven't been before, Derek is one of terrific set of writers there, and they do very fine work. If you like advanced stats, and even if you don't, they do a really nice cross-section on the Edmonton Oilers. Now, we're at the end of hour number one at Nation Radio, live at the Pint on Jasper and 109th Street. We've got a couple of Calgary Flame-based bloggers coming up, and then Kent Simpson from Team 1260 as well in the next hour. So stay tuned. It's all coming up after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at the Pint, Jasper and 109th Street. We invite you by to check everything out until 2 o'clock today and even afterwards. Great place to drop by and have a bite to eat on a Saturday afternoon. 4-1 McGill over the U of A. Damn, they've scored two really quick goals and looking difficult now for the Golden Bears. The Rangers up on Boston 1-0. That's in the third period now. And that's a very close, tight game. We'll keep you updated on that. An item that isn't going to be close or tight is probably Flames and Oilers. Game 75 for Edmonton tonight. The Oilers can't score, and they can give up goals in bunches. They've been outscored 34-7 in the last eight games, and were outshot 30-12 in a 4-0 loss to St. Louis on Thursday. It was a low point of the season. The lines tonight, Vandevelde between Eberle and Hartikainen, Cogliano between Pajärvi and Omark. O'Mara will be centering Jones and Reddix, and Fraser between Jacques and McIntyre, and that's from a Dan Tenser tweet this morning. Email me if there's an update on that. You can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. We're running out of positives to talk about in terms of the Oilers. There's still Eberle, Pajärvi, Petrie's looking good. Dubnyk will hopefully start tonight, give the team a chance to win. The Flames have lost three straight, six of their last seven games. They're 1-4-2 to fall to 10th seed out west with 85 points. Calgary is two behind Anaheim for the conference's eighth and final spot, and the Flames are 1 point behind ninth place Dallas. The Ducks visit Chicago tonight. Stars play Nashville. Calgary has won three straight games against the Oilers since the Oilers posted a 4-0 home win over the Flames in the season opener. After sweeping all six meetings last year, the Flames are now 10 out of 11 in the series, and likely tonight 11 out of 12. The Flames, who are just 15, 16, and 7 as the visiting team this season, have also claimed five of their last seven in Edmonton. Calgary is completing a four-game road trip tonight, and it really is going to be a case of very much the better team. They've got a reason to play for it, and the Oilers are running out the string. This might be a very difficult game for the Edmonton Oilers tonight. Now, in this hour, we're going to be talking to Kent Simpson, analyst of Team 1260's Oil Kings broadcast. We'll discuss last night's Oil Kings Rebels game. It was an outstanding contest. The star of the game was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but it was very close. The Oil Kings played at least even, or maybe better, especially in the second period of last night's game. But a couple of quick goals by the Rebels gave them the victory, and Nugent Hopkins ended up with 4 points on a couple of goals and looked very good, looked all of the first overall pick. We'll look forward to tonight's game with Kent Simpson. Also, Kent Wilson later in the hour from Flames Nation will join us to talk about the massive changes in fortunes for the Flames Sea since we last talked about 4 weeks ago. And Matt Fenwick, legendary blogger from Battle of Alberta, one of the real innovators of advanced math and the blogosphere, and somebody that we've been following for a long, long time, at least 5 years or more on the blogosphere and on the internet. Very innovative guy. Connor, do we have Matt on the line? Okay, good stuff. Matt, welcome.
Hi, Alan. How's the bar this afternoon?
Good. Where are you today?
I'm at home in between two Timbits games.
Oh. So life's confronting you then.
Yeah, actually, possibly some good time on these guys. My son's team played against Ryan Rashog's son's team this morning, and they won. So.
Oh, was Rashog's son, did he trip him or anything? He played a little dirty, or was he okay?
No, it was actually a pretty clean, hard-fought game.
Good stuff. Well, yeah. You know what? We're delighted that you're here, and especially because the Battle of Alberta is a favorite of everybody who reads blogs. And I wanted to ask you about the Flames, because they've had a tremendous run here, and it's looking like it's going to be very close. Will the fan base be satisfied if they finish just short of the goal line?
Satisfied? No, but I think we'll all be... Most of us are happy that the last 2 or 3 months have been a lot more fun than they otherwise would have been. It was looking pretty grim there in mid-December, and, you know, the death march for the rest of the season and whatnot, and their surge has made, you know, being a fan fun, which is, you know, a big part of the point of the thing.
I refuse to believe that Jay Feaster coming in as GM or being named GM is the responsible for all that turnaround. What's your best reason why the Flames turned it around so quickly? Is it puck luck turning their way?
That's part of it for sure, Alan. They were better than the 14th or 15th place team earlier in the season, and they're not as good as the team that went, you know, 16-6-4 or whatever for that stretch after that. But, yeah, mostly the hockey gods, I think.
The Flames should bank 2 points tonight. After that, I think it's home to Anaheim on the road to St. Louis and Colorado. Then they finish up at home against the Oilers again and Canucks.
You got it.
Can this team run the table?
It's possible. I mean, I think St. Louis is a little better team than their stature in the standings right now, as you may have noticed the other night, or even from their game against L.A. the other last weekend. So that looks to me like probably the hard one. notwithstanding the one against Vancouver for the final game, which, you know, now the best case scenario is they have to beat the Canucks on the last day of the season. That's pretty dismal, but yeah, it's possible. Sure, why not?
Do they need to do it to make the playoffs, do you think?
I think so. The bare minimum where they maybe have kind of a 10 or 20% chance, I think it's probably 10 out of the next 12 points. 11 might get them up to around 50-50, and then 12 points, suddenly you're kind of over 75 and a bit more confident.
If they do make it, obviously it'll be eighth place and they'll play Vancouver. I've seen a couple of the Flames Canucks games this year, and they've been pretty tight. I mean, the Flames have played them pretty much straight up. Do you think that's a series? I mean, it would be an upset, obviously, but do you think that's a series the Flames can stay in?
I think they could make it fun. I mean, the Canucks are a much better team, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure that most Canucks fans and maybe some of the players would be a little terrified about playing the Flames in the first round, just for karma reasons, if nothing else.
And obviously, if they got by Vancouver, they could probably go a long way, similar to what the Oilers did in 2006. Do you agree with that?
That's possible. Suddenly, whoever they play after the Canucks is not going to be as good a team as the Canucks, right? So
yep.
that gives you something. But I don't know. The Canucks seem pretty good this year, don't you think? I mean,
I get
a bit of a kind of a Flames in 89 type of vibe off of them. They're just kind of the march, the unstoppable march to the President's Trophy, and then, I don't know, a lot of good players.
No, I find it particularly galling to say, but, I mean, they are absolutely the flat-out favorite to come out of the West, and they look...
Totally
they look
galling, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's just there's something wrong with the universe. You know, it'll even out somehow, but I don't know what it is. With the success that the Flames have had, and they got a lot of veterans under contract, and they're going to be a cap team again next year, no matter what Jay Feaster does. But do you think they'll change less than they would have in midseason if that roll towards, you know, 14th place in the West had continued?
Well, they probably would have traded away a couple of their pending UFAs near the trade deadline if they hadn't made the run. So, but who really knows what they could have gotten for them? I guess probably Glenn Cross was the biggest piece, but you know, value is certainly less valuable than Penner, I would think, and so they could have picked up a bit of pieces for the far future, but in the off season, it's hard to say. I mean, really, I can't imagine that the last 3 months would have really changed a lot of Feaster's opinion on what the team is, or. And alternatively, Feaster might not be the GM, right? He's interim, and they were quite deliberate about saying that they were going to hire someone after the season, and maybe it will be him and maybe it won't. But I don't think that the run has fooled anyone into thinking that, oh, they're a couple moves away from the Stanley Cup. I mean, they need to get a bit younger for sure.
They've got, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tanguay, Glenn Cross, Morrison, Babchuk are all UFAs at the end of the season. Is that correct?
Yeah, there might be one or two others too, but yeah.
I think the Flames would like potentially all four of those guys to return, but they have some cap issues. If you had to pick one or two from that group you'd like to see return to the Flames, which one would they be?
I think probably Tanguay. I mean, Glenn Cross over the next 5 years is probably going to be the best player, right? But he's probably earned a big contract, and I expect him... I almost hope he does, but at any rate, I expect him to go out into the market and get a nice 5 or 6 year deal for a lot of money, and I think that's probably the best scenario for everyone.
Right.
Tanguay might be happy with a couple years with a little less money just because he's got a good situation here and had a lot of success and all that.
As an Oilers fan,
Morrison are fine, and they've been better than I thought they would be when they signed up, but they're pretty replaceable.
As an Oilers fan going back almost 40 years, I keep waiting for the Flames to trade one of three players, Iginla, Kiprusoff, or Regier, because to me that will represent the rebuild is on. Do you see any of those three leaving this summer?
I think it's possible. I don't think Iginla's getting traded. I think it's possible that Regier will get traded if they get the right offer. And I would love to see them trade Kipper if they got something a deal that could even provide cover for trading him away, right? Like a,
right.
a draft pick or an okay prospect or something, just to get rid of his cap hit and kind of move on. But the way the local media talks and the organization and stuff, they still think Kipper's a Vezina caliber goalie. So I think we're stuck with him for another couple years.
This is Nation Radio, live at the Pint, Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. We're at Jasper and 109th in conversation with Matt Fenwick from the Battle of Alberta. Changing gears a little bit here. Which advanced stats do you use when you're evaluating a player and those Flames players and teams over the years? Which ones do you value the most?
Well, the Fenwick number, probably. No, I'm kidding.
I'm about to ask you about that.
actually, I like those. I probably have used them less in the last couple of years. Now that they're easier to use, I used to use the raw numbers that were on Time on Ice, like Ferrari stuff. But now that they're on Desjardins and rated per 60 and relative and all that, I haven't used it as much. But in general, starting position for sure, and finishing position. A lot of people don't really think about that, but the kind of the pluckers out there who manage to finish the shift in the opposing end and get a whistle from the goalie tying it up or what have you, they help their teammates out a lot, because then the coach can put out an offensive player, or it's more likely that the next shift is going to get a scoring chance, right?
Right.
Guys will always end up in their own end with a whistle, skate off. Now the next shift has a big hill to climb. So I quite like zone finish. But the shots on goal and the possession stats are worthwhile for sure. They're not the be-all, end-all, but, I mean, a lot of people have gone very wrong by ignoring them just in hilarious ways in the last couple of years even. So.
Interesting. I appreciate your viewpoint on that. Now, since you brought it up, those who are familiar with Corsi number or Rel Corsi will be interested to know about the Fenwick number. So can you, in two sentences or less, explain Fenwick?
It's just Corsi with the block shots for and against excluded. And essentially, I didn't name it. back when we were talking about Corsi in the first place, I said that I thought it made more sense to exclude block shots, because insofar as you're going to use it over, say, a long period of time to compare different players, then if there's a difference, if there's no difference between two players except for how often they block shots or how often they get shots blocked, I think that makes a difference in whether they are creating or preventing scoring chances. And so you ought to exclude block shots to get kind of a better idea, because the idea, of course, he was to have an objective proxy for scoring chances. So over the long term, I think you exclude block shots. Now, over the course of a couple games, or you look at one game and one team blocked 20 shots and the other team blocked 5 shots, well, the team that blocked 20 shots, that's kind of bad, because that means they were in their own end the whole time, right? And that's
right.
Not going to be sustainable. But blocking shots and having your shot not get blocked that you're attempting is an actual skill, I think. So that's where that came from.
If we could live in a world...
22 sentences or less.
Right. If we could live in a world where all 30 teams had someone tracking actual scoring chances, like real, scoring chances, do you think that would, and based on who was on the ice, do you think that would have a value over a period of years? We'd be able to track specific players and how well they do team to team, age-wise, all those things?
Oh, no question. I don't... I think if you try and refine it further, like, for example, David Staples, individual scoring chances and trying to break out what you see on the ice, I think you probably lose more than you gain by doing that. So if you knew scoring chances over the long term, I think that would be very informative. And I certainly have a strong suspicion that's been borne out by Gabe Desjardins and other people that they correlate pretty well with goals over the long term and with winning. So that's useful. And wouldn't it be fascinating to be able to go backwards with some of that stuff, eh?
That's one of my dreams, just because you can't. Nothing's on video and you wouldn't be able to catch it all. But I'd like to even do, I know that we were talking about Pat McLean earlier, Black Dog Hates Skunks. He did a great item on the 1972 Canada-Russia series.
Yeah, fantastic.
I read it like it was, like a kid. It was wonderful stuff. And I think that's the sort of thing that maybe we could do in very small samples like that, and it would tell us a lot about how the game has changed, better or worse, and what we maybe thought we knew about those legends like Phil Esposito and
right.
Measure there.
I do have Game 7 of the 86 Smythe Final on DVD, so I might try that one out and see just how lucky the Flames got or what.
There you go. You know what? We could do that for the old Oilers games too. Hey, Matt Fenwick, where can people read you?
Most often on Twitter, which is at Fenwick Matt, but also battlesalberta.ca. I probably put up something there once every week or two.
Usually baseball standings.
I could always come back in the future.
All right. Matt, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Alan.
All right. That's Matt Fenwick, who's a legendary guy on the blogosphere. And Battle of Alberta is, I hope they're little resurrection going on right now, but that was a terrific meeting place and some great minds there. And as you can tell, a very well-spoken individual, and we appreciate his time, and we'll no doubt have him back again. Now, Connor, is it now 4-2 McGill? Am I right? I think it's a 4-2 score right now for McGill over the University of Alberta Golden Bears. We'll give you an update on that. There's about a minute left in the Ranger-Bruin game, and it's still 1-0. A Derek Steppen goal early. It was definitely in the first period. That's all, and that's basically it. Boston's got 26 shots on goal. The Rangers, 23. It's been a tight game, and that one goal so far is standing up. This is Nation Radio. We're live with the Pint, Jasper in 109th Street. Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. We have a couple more guests to go before the 2 o'clock hour. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation is next, and then Kent Simpson, Team 1260 analyst. Stay tuned.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at the Pint downtown, Jasper and 109th Street for Nation Radio. And Connor, what's that score now? Is it 4-2 McGill over U of A?
Yeah, 4-2 right now.
Okay, I'd ask you
just,
that.
Just starting the third here.
Oh, okay. I'd ask you that earlier. You weren't there. What happened there, buddy?
Well, we've got a new person in the studio, on the station here, so I had to introduce myself. You know?
What's his name?
Her name is Sammy. She's on Virgin Radio. So.
Okay. Say no more, Connor.
How to talk to the weekend girl,
I was 20 once, buddy. You just, just keep us on the air and it'll all be good.
Of course.
We are Nation Radio. The Oilers are playing the Flames tonight, so we've had an opportunity to talk to Matt Fenwick from Battle of Alberta, and we also want to get to Kent Wilson, Flames Nation. We had him on about 4 weeks ago, and things were looking dire, and I was poking at him a little bit, and the hockey gods don't like that, and as it turned out, the Flames turned it around and had a great run. And this weekend is very big for tonight's a big game, and then, of course, for the next five games afterwards, the Flames, if they run the table, they've got a real shot. And we'll talk to Kent Simpson, Team 1260 analyst, about last night's crazy game. Did you see any of that? It was on Shaw, Channel 10. It's on again tonight. And, of course, Team 1260 has the broadcast 7:30 this evening. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was the star in the third period. I'll tell you what, that young Oil King team played their hearts out, especially with a very strong second period. And one of the stars for the Oil Kings was Keegan Lowe. Man, does he look like his dad in terms of how he plays and his style, even the way he turns. It's genetic. There's no doubt about it. And I do follow the draft, but I haven't paid much attention to the names that have been outside the first round. I don't know where Keegan Lowe is going to go in the draft, but he's a guy who's very interesting, and I think we should spend a little bit more time talking about Dylan Rock and Keegan Lowe and those Edmonton Oil Kings. We'll do that with Kent Simpson here before the top of the hour. The game tonight's going to be an interesting one because the Flames do need it, and the Oilers are basically running out the string. I think if you're an Edmonton Oiler or an Oilers fan, you would hope for a better effort than the one we saw against St. Louis on Thursday night. It was a 4-0 contest. In the last eight games, the Oilers have been outscored 34-7. I don't think you can really fault them there. They just don't have the horses. And with so many injuries and so many rookies in the lineup now, the top line tonight from a Dan Tenser tweet is Hartikainen and Eberle playing with I think it's Van de Velde, who's the top line center. So that gives you an idea about where exactly the Edmonton Oilers are going for the next few games. They're game number 75, so they're seven away. Do we have Ken on the phone now?
Yeah, he's here.
Okay. Hey, Kent, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. We talked, 4 weeks ago, and things were looking a little more dire than they are now. I think I asked you if they were buyers or sellers in the Flames at the deadline. What's turned it around? Is it just they really have a desperation and they're playing together and they've really got secondary scoring? Are those the reasons?
Well, I think we sort of went over it a couple of weeks ago when I talked. When it was really dire was in December when the team, after a pretty dreadful November, they were in 14th at one point in December. It didn't look good. And that's when Dale Sutter got fired. They turned it around actually around mid-January. And really what happened was the Flames were never a 14th place team in the Western Conference in terms of actual skill. They'd sort of run into a bunch of bad bounces. Kiprusoff hadn't played very well, especially in December. And then all the percentages sort of reversed themselves for a good 4 to 6 weeks for the Flames. I think they had one of the best records in the league there for a while. And right now they have one win in their last seven, so it looks like the percentages have sort of gone back downwards for them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it just seems like it always graduates to the median. But there is a sense, I think, among Flames fans, and you mentioned it on Flames Nation, I think when you were quoting King Lear there for a while, that there is a sense that maybe there's something happening here.
Yeah, it's really hard to get a handle of just because they're all over the map this year. I mean, they were dreadful for the first, two or three months. They were one of the best teams in the league for a couple of weeks there, maybe 2 months. And now they're back to struggling to win again. And, I mean, they've had actually a couple of good games where they've lost their game in Los Angeles. I thought they probably could have won that game. And then they went into San Jose and just got their clock cleaned. I mean, it wasn't even close. I think the scoring chance count that night was 26-9, because I count all the scoring chances for the, and that's not even in the same realm. So the thing with the Flames is, and this has been true of them for the last couple of years, is they tend to beat up on the weaker teams in both the East and West. They're capable of consistently beating, teams below them in the standings, but they have a hard time competing with the elite teams, and I don't think that's going to change going forward.
But their last six games, including tonight, are, you've got the Oilers twice, you've got St. Louis in there. They should be able to come out of there 4-2-5-1. Is that enough?
I don't think that will be enough. I mean, the issue with Flames is they need probably both Dallas and Anaheim to fall off a bit. They've both been winning a lot more than the Flames have recently. So even if the Flames have a good record down the stretch here, they're going to need one or both of those teams to go 500 or worse. So their fate really isn't in their own hands. I mean, they do have a favorable schedule here because they have, Edmonton and Colorado. I mean, no heavy hitters left except for Vancouver on the last day. But they are going to need some help for sure.
Kent, the Flames, no matter what they do this summer, they're going to be a veteran team next year because they've got so many contracts signed for the next year. There have been examples in NHL and sports history of teams who are veteran and they get even more veteran. The 66-67 Leafs, the Detroit Tigers did that for a time. Philadelphia Phillies did it successfully as well. Is there a sense that the rebuild is going to start this summer with Jay Feaster, or might this be the idea that maybe there's another year left in this group?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen this summer, Alan. They have a lot of guys locked into contracts. They don't have a lot of kids who could maybe come in and displace any of them. There's a lot of no-trade clauses, of course, so it's going to be, even if, I mean, Feaster hasn't come out and said, yeah, we're going to tear this down and start over, so even if he wanted to do that, he would be pretty well handcuffed this summer. So, next summer, that's when a lot of these contracts go away. Corey Saric is gone. I believe Alex Kotelik is done. Nicholas Hagman is done. They got a lot of guys, finishing up here, and a lot of cap space will become open. So I think they might just tread water this coming season, re-sign a couple of guys where they can, manage the cap as they can, see what they got, and then really rejig everything if they have to the summer after.
I asked Fenwick this question, and he said that he'd be okay with them dealing, or more than okay with them dealing, Kiprusoff among the veteran group. Is there a possibility they might do something like that, like sort of like borrow from the current roster a little bit to pay for the future, or is that you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound?
I think that would make sense. I can't get a read on whether the management is willing to do that or not. They certainly weren't willing to do that under Sutter, but I don't even know if Feaster is going to be the guy this summer, so it's really hard to say, yeah, they're going to do this or that. Personally, I think they should consider selling one of their major assets right now, depending on the market, of course. We always have to have the caveat that, you know, the return is important. But, I agree with Matt. If they could trade Kiprusoff first amongst, three main guys, again, Laverguerre, Kiprusoff, that's the guy I would go with.
And I wasn't aware of this, and I try to follow the Flames as much as possible. It's like know your enemy. But I wasn't aware that Feaster is an interim guy, and he hasn't had that taken off of the nameplate. So there's a possibility they'd go out and shop for a new GM in the summer?
That seems to be. I mean, otherwise I don't understand why they would stick Feaster with the interim tag. They were very adamant about him sort of being just the acting GM and not the actual GM when he took the position in December. They haven't come out and said, nope, he's the guy. They've just sort of had him hanging around minding the store. So I don't know if he's just the guy taking care of things while they look around, or I'm not sure. But I think there's definitely a chance that they're going to go shopping for someone else.
Is there a lot? I know Greg Nemish played his. Let me ask you about that. Nemish played his first NHL game. How did he look, and how do they project him? Do they project him onto next year's roster?
I don't think so. He didn't look too bad. He played on a sort of a kid line, which was a fourth unit, with another kid named Lance Boma. He got scored on pretty twice in his first two shifts, I think. But it was one of those situations where you can't point the finger at the kid. It's just, bang, bang, play type stuff. But I wasn't very impressed with Nemish in the earlier this season. I saw him in preseason and stuff. He looked like a kid well underwater. But, he's had an okay season in the AHL. I think he crested 30 points in 70 games, which isn't very impressive. But the Abbotsford Heat were very low on firepower this year, so he actually ended up being the second highest scorer on the team. But as far as next year, I don't think he's quite there yet as an everyday guy. And as we've mentioned, it's a pretty full roster anyway. So he would really have to take a few steps forward to unsee that, I think.
The Flames are a difficult team to follow if you're not a fan of them in regard to prospects, because they do like to do the Detroit Red Wing idea, which is have the guy play on the farm for a couple of years and get his feet wet as a pro. There are no Giordanos down there. There's nobody that we should that the Flames Nation is waiting to see emerge as a real top drawer talent at the NHL level.
No, there doesn't seem to be. I mean, we may talk about TJ Brody in that conversation just because he had a very good preseason. He passed a guy on the depth chart just with his season. He had an excellent junior career, and he's actually, I think, the third highest scorer on the farm team right now, and he hasn't even played as many games because he actually played the Flames for a brief stint at the start of the year. So he's one of the few guys to actually get excited about. He's only 20 or 21, and the only other guy I would really suggest is exciting is Tim Eriksson, who plays in the Swedish Elite League, and he's been playing 20 to 25 minutes a night there during their playoff run. So we haven't seen him in North America yet, and you never know how they're gonna acclimate. But I think he's gonna slip the pond, and we're gonna see him coming up.
Yeah, I've followed him a little bit because he's on the same team as, I believe, same team as Adam Larson, and he really is playing some important minutes for them, and he does look like a player that the Flames fans can look forward to. And I don't want to put you on the spot here. I looked for it, and the Flames have their first-round pick this summer, right?
They do, yeah.
Okay. Do they have their – I know the Oilers have their third for the Stamkos deal. Do they have their second-rounder, or is it an option to another team, or where is that?
The second-rounder, no, they don't. Okay. I forget which of the trades it was traded. It was either for Rene Bork or it was for Wayne Primo. They traded a package to Toronto to get rid of Wayne Primo, basically, because his contract was poor. And they sent over a second rounder in that trade. I'm guessing that's the one, but Yeah, they only have one pick inside the top 100 this summer.
I asked this of Matt and Fenwick, and I think it's interesting because I wasn't aware until I started getting ready for our conversation today that the Flames are really so close to the cap for next year as well. And they do have some free agents in Tanguay, Glenn Cross, Morrison, and Babchuk. Those are the front line UFAs that I recall. Of those four, which one is the one that hurts the most to lose?
That's a good question. It's probably going to be Curtis Glenn Cross. He has been an excellent driver of possession ever since we signed him. Thanks for that, by the way.
yeah, no problem.
I mean, he's never really faced top-line opposition, so it's not like he's a Selkie winner or anything, but he's just been... I mean, it's nice to have a guy who can play 15 minutes a night, 10 minutes a night, always has the puck going north, scores 15 to 20 goals from without a lot of, cushy circumstances. So, I mean, he's a very good player, but he's probably going to have to go to the free market, and he's probably going to get a pretty good contract. So, and as you say, the Flames are cap crunched, and it's going to be tough for them to afford him.
Ken, thank you so much for this.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay, that's Kent Wilson from Flames Nation. He's becoming a regular here. This is a good update on the Calgary Flames, and this is a big weekend for them. And then, of course, there's like 15 days left in the National Hockey League season. It's coming down very quickly now, and these playoff teams are going to sort themselves out very quickly. I think probably by the time we get together next weekend, things will be very settled or pretty close to settled. We still have Ken Simpson to talk to, but I wanted to give you an update. The Oil Kings are in action again tonight here on Team 1260, 7:30 game start. But if you're an Edmonton Oiler fan and you're online scooting around looking for where your CHL Oiler draft picks are playing. In the queue, it's Jeremy Blaine and Olivier Waugh. They play for Acadie Bathurst. They played last night. Waugh got blown out of the game, and it was a loss against Victoria Tigers. And it's a very interesting series that probably will go seven, but you would have hoped that the Acadie Bathurst Titan would have played a little better last night. For the OHL, Ryan Martindale and the Ottawa 67 start their playoff series tonight against Sudbury. Ottawa finished second in their conference. They're in an offensive powerhouse in a very powerful league, and they should go through. So you might want to follow those two. And then the WHL, there's almost not a series in the Western Hockey League that doesn't have Edmonton Oiler prospect involved. Curtis Hamilton and the Saskatoon Blades, they got lucky with their travel schedule in the first round. They play PA Raiders in game one of their series tonight. The Blades scored 310 goals. They should have no problems against PA. Now you say that, right? But it should be a pretty interesting series to follow if you're a fan of the Edmonton Oilers, because there should be lots of goals. Christian Pelz and Cameron Abney got into action last night with the Oil Kings against the Red Deer Rebels, and I've seen Abney a couple of times at Oil Kings games, and he never looked as impressive as he did last night. And I think that's one of the first questions I'm going to ask our friend here, Ken Simpson. Cameron Abney really did look like a power forward last night, scored a goal for the Edmonton Oil Kings against the Red Deer Rebels. That series goes tonight again, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was a terror in the third period, and he'll be this big subject matter for that series. Tyler Bunns and the Medicine Hat Tigers drew a tough assignment in Brandon. They lost last night. Bunns gave up six goals, I believe it was. Hit the second-best save percentage during the regular year in the Western Hockey League, and there's a lot of hope that the Tigers will go deep enough. Not really sure whether Tyler Pitlick, the high second-round pick for the Oilers, will get into action during the playoffs. He had an injury and missed the rest of the regular season. Drew Zerwanka and Kootenay Ice face off against Moose Jaw in the first round. The Warriors won last night in an upset, 4-0. And then Martin Marinson and Prince George are the underdogs against Kelowna. They lost last night, and he's stumbling a little bit down the stretch, struggling a little bit, but a guy who the Edmonton Oilers think very highly of, and it could be playing for Oklahoma City and someone we should watch for at training camp in the fall. Among those draft eligibles who played last night, Nugent Hopkins was 2-2 plus 4 points and a plus one. Jonathan Huberdeau was 0-4-4 plus two, and Landeskog had a couple of goals, 3 points plus three in a loss last night, and Dougie Hamilton was 1-1-2 and plus two in the same game, and Couturier scored as well. Coming up in the next segment, we'll talk a little bit about the draft, a little bit about Keegan Lowe, and a lot about the Edmonton Oil Kings with Kent Simpson.
Low Tide, only on Edmonton Sports Radio. Team 1260.
and Jasper and 109th, and we'll be here until 2 o'clock. You can come down before then or just drop by this afternoon for a great time. Lots hopping here at the Pint. And, I'll give you an update on the U of A game. It's 5-2 McGill now in the third, and the U of A is killing off a four-minute penalty. So things are looking a little dire if you're a U of A alumni or follow the U of A Golden Bears. Speaking of which, we welcome Kent Simpson. How are you, man?
I don't like the sound of that score, Alan.
And you're on the ice right now. You're about to play, or you're playing in a game yourself?
I'm going to be on the ice in about 20 minutes. So if you don't want to create a mental picture, I'm basically in my underwear right now, just ready to suit up.
Thanks for that, Kent. I really appreciate it. Hey, you know what? That was some fire wagon hockey last night in Red Deer.
Was it ever? Was it ever? I mean, a great game, highly entertaining, certainly set the stage for what should be a pretty darn good playoff series. And I thought the Oil Kings played great. Unfortunately, a little too late in the third period there.
I was listening to the Pipeline boys driving in this morning, and they were saying that second period might be the best the Oil Kings have played all year.
No question. I mean, to a man, I mean, there was commitment right through the lineup. And, you know, at one point, or actually we got the stats from Steve Blewett, who's the Oil Kings statistician. It was 12-1 on takeaways versus giveaways for the Oil Kings. They were pressuring up ice, terrific back pressure, taking away any opportunities that the Red Deer Rebels had. The final shots in that period were 19-4. They ended up winning the period 1-0, so it was 2-2 going into the third period. But it easily could have been 3 or 4 to 2 for the Oil Kings. But unfortunately, they couldn't hold on. And a number 9 named Ryan Nugent-Hopkins took over in the third period.
He really did. He had he looked good before the third period, but the goals that he scored and really the plays that he made, that back pass, he's a freak. He really is an outstanding hockey player.
He's just got incredible vision, and I really think he's a guy that you know, looks, you know, sees the play and sees two plays ahead. You know, I'm certainly not going to put him in the category of a Wayne Gretzky, but, you know, Wayne Gretzky always talked about, you know, he always, you know, saw where he was going to put the puck because he knew where it was going to be the next play after that. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has that vision on the ice. He knows if he puts the puck somewhere and he goes somewhere else, he's going to get it right back. And I'll tell you what, in that third period there, he a little bit, you know, fortunate, obviously, a turnover from the Oil Kings inside their own blue line, sprung him away on a 2-on-1. He's not going to miss those. And then on the power play, he did a really nice job of getting open and then firing home a one-timer.
Ken, was that game last night, because the Oil Kings played so well and they didn't get the result they wanted, is it difficult for them to turn around and recover and play at that level tonight, or will they use that as impetus?
Al, you know what? It can really go both ways. I mean, you can look at that and say, geez, you know, you're tied 3-3 with the number 2 seed. You know, there's 8 minutes left in the period. This is the game that we've got to win. And then it slips away. The other side of it is, hey, you know what? Look what we just did to this team. We know we can beat them. We know we can play with them. Maybe that gives us a little bit more, you know, incentive, inspiration going into the next night. And I think what I like the best for the Oil Kings is they don't have to wait a day in between. They probably got that bitter taste in their mouth last night, and they can get right back on the ice tonight and, you know, carry on from the good systems that they played yesterday.
This is Nation Radio at the Pint. We're live at 109th and Jasper on Edmonton Sports Radio Team. Yeah, I'm at the Pint, yeah.
Oh, good for you. Have one on me.
Hey, listen, we're both doing what we want to do today. You're in your underwear on a telephone, and I'm here. Listen, I've seen Cameron Abney play 3 or 4 times live and a little bit on television. I've never seen him play as a power forward the way he did last night.
Great eye by you, Al. Great eye. You know, he's playing some of the best hockey he's played, really, that I've seen him in a year and a half. And I think the biggest thing that's changed for Cameron Abney is he's starting to move his feet. And he's starting to realize that if he moves his feet first, you know, gets his head up, then makes a play, he might either get a pack with a little give and go. But he's a guy that when he gets going, he does have some good speed under him. He can be effective on a forecheck. And so, you know, I actually had a little conversation with the general manager, Bob Green, in between the periods, and he just said, you know, night and day, the way this guy is skating. And you can really see, I mean, you know, first guy on forecheck, and he's such an intimidating presence out there. A lot of times earlier in the year, he was just kind of a little too late. He was a second late getting on the forecheck, and, you know, it's tough to, you know, put the fear in anyone if you're, you know, kind of a day late, a dollar short. Well, now he's, you know, arriving right at time. and in ill humor, as they say. And certainly this is the best that I've seen him play since he's been an Oil King.
Was it a health issue, or do you just think the light has turned on and he's figured out the role that he can play to be effective?
Well, I mean, he obviously was battling a hand injury for quite some time. Now, you know, your first reaction is to say, well, that's pretty far away from your legs. But, you know, if you got something niggly and it's bothering you, maybe you're not, you know, going all out and you're not committing 100% to a big hit. But, you know, this is a guy that's very competitive. He's got some drive. And I think more than anything, Al, I mean, this is a guy that I think the lights just kind of turned on and he's kind of realized what he can and can't do out there. And he's realizing that, hey, if I hold on to the puck a second longer, if I get, you know, I can use my body to shield the puck, he can be a very effective player.
I saw Christian Pelsmaker, a really nice defensive play in the first period. His game is really coming around as well.
Is it ever? I mean, this is a guy that, you know, I think you and I have talked about this, over a coffee before, but, you know, it's so tough for a young European player to come over, and it's a new language, and, to be honest, the first quarter of the season, I thought, geez, the Oilers must have saw something different than I'm seeing out there. But, you got to be patient with a player like that. And now I'm certainly seeing, so hats off to the Oilers' European scouts, because this guy can fly. I would have no problem putting him in the top 10 for speed of skaters in the WHL.
Wow.
And, you see his comfort level now. And he's another guy that once he realizes what he can and can't do on the ice, accustoming himself to the North American game, he's proving to be very, very effective.
Quick email question from Speeds for you, Kent. If you were the Oilers, would you be looking to avoid drafting Keegan Lowe, obviously because of the Kevin Lowe connection, because of the potential for perception, or is that something that strikes you as irrelevant? Would you just go ahead and take the player if he's the best player available?
No question. I mean, when you're in the draft, you're going to take the best player that's available. And Keegan Lowe is the guy that, has just grown leaps and bounds. I mean, scored a beautiful goal last night, a rocket one-timer shot. He's got a little bit of a grit and edge to his game. Really like the way that he's coming around. And you know what I mean? If the Oilers are choosing and he's the guy that they want to take, if you know, comparing to other guys available, why not? I mean, they know that they've... they know he's a good kid. They know his family life, and those are obviously lots of big questions that the Oilers ask their potential draft picks. They know he's a good worker and is easily coachable and that sort of thing. So I wouldn't see them shying away from it. No.
Do you think St. Croix is improving his draft status in the second half of the year and now into the playoffs?
Well, I really think this is a big playoff for St. Croix because, he had that stretch, kind of in late November where, 18 points in five games and was just on fire, vaulted himself at one point into the top five in WHL scoring. And, people were talking about this guy, his draft status was rising. He had a little injury over Christmas and it took him a while to kind of get back his game underneath him. And, he scored a beautiful goal last night, a hard shot right in the top corner past Darcy Kuemper, who's a large goalie. And, so I think, obviously the scouts have seen what he's capable of, but, obviously the playoffs is where, obviously your medal's tested and a lot of questions can be answered. So if he can perform pretty well, whether it's a 4, 5, 6 game series, who knows, that'll probably answer a lot of questions.
Hey, Ken, thanks very much. Put some clothes on and go play a hockey game.
All right, buddy. You have a great afternoon. Good talking to you.
All right. That's it for Nation Radio Live with the Pine. Have a great week, everyone.